Maybe because it was a long weekend, I'll remind you where I stood at the end of the... Is this for speakers? So, I have this object, this modular stack of formal groups. And I should probably write about 5 times larger than that, right? Although, if you notice during the workshop, whenever you made somebody write larger, people have a natural type size, right? So they would write larger for a little while, and then it would shrink down. What's that? Right. So, and then for each prime P, I developed a height filtration. Which I can go two ways. I can go down. So forth. So MN is height greater than or equal to N. So this was P equal to 0, and this, then I had some other things along the way. Or I could take the complementary opens. So UN is height. So this is a little bit confusing, but this is the way I want to do it. Height less than or equal to N. So in fact, MN intersect UN is not empty. This is height exactly N. And I'll talk more about what goes in there. Now I made some claims about this, one of which, in order to do this, I made a claim that, so there were two claims left standing. We can vote on whether you want me to prove them or not. The first one was that if G is a formal group over a scheme S, which is itself over FP, and F was a homomorphism, with DF equal to 0, goes from the invariant differentials to itself, then it factors through the Frobenius. That was claim one, and somebody wanted me to actually prove that. But is that person still here? I don't know. So what do you think? Do you want me to prove that? Sure. So the proof isn't hard. It's one of these little things where you have to get your homomorphisms in the right order. So let's do that. So by uniqueness, it's sufficient to work locally. Then I can just glue them together. And work locally. So we can choose all the coordinates we want. And then F is a power series. So let F of XY be the associated, this is the formal group law associated to G, and we can write F of X thing. So what does it mean to be a homomorphism? It means that F of X plus FY equals, which is the same thing of f of xy, equals, that's what it means to be a homomorphism, right? Which, now I have to get this in the right order, that's the same. So now apply, this is great, to calculus, right? Take the partial derivative with respect to y. Okay? So what do you get? You get f prime xy times the chain rule. So this is the derivative with respect to y equals, and on this side you get fy times f prime of y. Now, what does this hypothesis mean? By hypothesis, f prime of 0 is equal to 0. Now, what do we want? Well, in order to get a factoring, we want f prime of x equal to 0. Okay? Since we're in characteristic P, this implies that f of x, like Galois theory, is gx to the p for some power series g. Right? This is your favorite trick from Galois theory. So that's exactly what the Frobenius locally is just given by x goes to x to the p. So that's all it is. Well, now you just set, in this expression, set y equal to 0. Star, and what do you have? Well, f prime of, what happens when you set y equal to 0 into f of xy? Well, that's just equal to x, right? Since, I'll do it. As long as I'm being pedantic, let's do it. Times f prime of 0. Well, by hypothesis, this whole thing is equal to 0. But this is equal to f prime of x times fy of x. Now, what do you notice? This is an invertible power series. Okay? F of x equals 1. Because f of xy begins x plus y plus a bunch of stuff, this is an invertible power series. So, this implies. All right? That may be the only proof I do all week. Fun with partial derivatives. My next claim, so who wanted that, Gustavo? You believe it now? You do use something, right? You usually have a homomorphism. That's the next claim was that claim two was that Mn plus 1 contained in Mn is an effective Cartier divisor. Now, the claim not just closed, but it's sort of the best possible closed. Now, the difficulty here is not so much the claim, but the definition. Okay. So what is an effective Cartier divisor? So let me write that down. So there's several ways to say it. So maybe it's probably better to say it's defined by. Reiser is a section, is a pair, let's say on X, LV, where L is a line bundle, so is an invertible sheaf. And V is a global section. So that there is a condition on it, it's not any global section. V from OX into L. Well, so is exact. Many authors also require that L mod OX is flat over something. That's not going to matter here, so I won't. All right. If you have such a thing, you can tensor with L inverse. This thing's locally free, so this stays exact. And you get an injection like this into OX. And the image of that defines a closed, the image of that defines an ideal, which identifies L inverse with an ideal I. And the resulting closed subscheme, closed subobject, I'm working with stacks. Substack. B can name X, is also often called an effective card. Sort of a closed thing of codimension one embedded in sort of the nicest possible way. And now my claim two, actually, I can refine as MN plus one and an MN is the effect of Cartier divisor. Given by the pair omega tensor. I might not write the tensor every time. Right? That's where Vn is this element that's. I can remind you what Vn was. You factor, Vn was the global section, Vn equals zero, if and only if of G equals zero. G is height greater than three. It's the same Vn as in BP theory. That's yes. This Vn was an isomorphism invariant, so if you moved through the stack, Vn changed, but not its zeroness. It remained zero if and only if. Does that answer the question?
I guess so.
Yeah. Let's pretend it did. I'm willing to belabor this. But I'd have to remind you what Vn was, and that's the would you like me to?
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah. Maybe I'll do So I was going to do things in a different order, but maybe to actually answer that question, I'll take things in a slightly different order, and you'll see this phenomenon more globally that way. Okay, that's the, let's see. Before doing that, it's worth pointing out that the inclusion MN contained in MFG is closed and defined by some sheaf of ideal. By some sheaf of ideals, ONFG. And you might want to know what this has to do with the invariant ideal you called IN in homotopy theory. Okay? So maybe I'll try to address that question, and it'll also address this question here, okay? Whether or not this thing's globally defined. All right. So let me talk about the role of p-typical formal group laws. So these are the things that come out of Brown-Peterson theory. Now, the point to note here is that formal groups aren't p-typical, it's formal group laws. Or in other words, another way to say it is that it's coordinates that are p-typical, not formal groups. So let's let F be a formal group law. Over R, which is itself a Z localized at PL. Then F is p-typical. This is formula I'm going to write down, and it's a little bit unmotivated. So this is Cartier's definition. If for all primes P, primes Q not equal to P, the following formula F satisfies the following symmetry condition. I call it, you take the, you add up the roots of unity, and that's equal to zero, where C is a qth root of unity. Where would you ever come up with such a thing? Well, you know, I wouldn't. I mean, Cartier came up with it. He came up with it by studying the associated Dudenay theory for these things. So these are abelian group objects in some category, so they're categories, so they're modules over some ring. Okay? And he figured out what ring that was. And then he figured out that if he imposed this condition, he could cut down that ring considerably. And just by looking at the structure of the ring he got. This is all spelled out in Hasewinkel's book, but whether or not you could get into that book and get out again alive is a question. But I'll leave that to you. So let's just pretend that we can do this, and then note the following facts about this. So there's the Cartier idempotent. Which has a topological analog, which is often called the Quillen idempotent. So if X is any coordinate, if G is a formal group, with a coordinate X, then there is a new coordinate. Then the associated formal group law might not be p-typical. Then there is a new coordinate which I call E of X, which of course has to be written this way. A0 R cross is a unit, so that the associated formal group law is p-typical. If X already had this property, I should define a coordinate to be p-typical if its associated formal group law is. Then E of X is equal to. That's why it's called an idempotent. If you do it twice, it's the same thing. So that's groovy. I won't write this, but that tells you that the groupoid of p-typical formal group laws is equivalent to the groupoid of regular formal group laws over this kind of thing. That'll be also appear in another guy's later. Let's see, if F is p-typical, then the p-series that you get out of this has this following form. Normally, so I can sum up over F. And more than that, and P determine the formal group law. And hence G. G is the formal group. The VNs that I've got here, Vn of G, if you like, is equal to, where is this thing? This is just in R, so it isn't a section of this bundle at all, but you can recover it from this. It's equal to Un times the canonical invariant differential. So this was in other words, for p-typical formal groups coordinates, you have a canonical lift of Vn to the entire ring. It's not just defined time modulo some previous ideal. You've got it in the big thing. What do I get out of it? There's more and better. If phi from G to G prime is a let me just say isomorphism of formal groups with p-typical coordinates, then, let's see, I can express phi as a power series because I have a choice of coordinates. So I'd like to write phi of x is actually, I'd like to write down a very similar expression to that. Leave a little room here because this isn't quite right. Where f is what? Now you'd like this to be true, but it isn't, because in order to be true, I would have to have f prime here. So the real answer is that. But that still determines phi of x. In doing homotopy theory, if you're actually going to make calculations, these are great because these things here grow in degree exponentially, whereas the things in the Lazard ring only grow in degree linearly. And exponential growth is always good for calculations. It's very rare you need more than V4, for example. All right, so what do you get out of this? So here's some covers. At this point, rephrasing Cartier's theorems, you get the following proposition. There is a faithfully flat, surjective faithfully flat and I got this in wrong order, representable morphism. I can't say down to MFG itself, but I can. Can I write this? Would you believe? Do you like that notation? So I'm talking about, this means consider only formal groups over ZP algebras. I've base changed, if you like, over this. So this equals, this may hurt rather than help to write down this notation. All right, so this classifies the formal group associated to the universal p-typical formal group law. So I have to assert that exists. Why does that exist? That's this statement. These things determine F. And I can do better. Let's take, let's call this thing V. That's Ravenel's notation. Of course, for Ravenel's working in graded sense, so these things are V1, V2, and so forth. So it makes sense to call this thing V at this point. What's the two-category pullback? So this is a thing that classifies two p-typical formal groups and their isomorphisms, and an isomorphism between this, but now you get to read that off of this. So that's... As always, this... You get this term, this first term, because we're working in this ungraded setting. All right. That's right. That's the content of this. No, the polynomial ring is this thing based on U's. And this is the thing that classifies the isomorphisms between. Okay. That's this is all Cartier. V is, of course, BP star. For you fans of homotopy theory. Not that Brown and Peterson knew that. That's Quillen all the way, right? That's Quillen recognizes this thing. When Brown and Peterson constructed this thing, they didn't even have a ring spectrum. They just had some spectrum that they built by constructing its Posnikov tower. And Quillen just took this idempotent and implied it to MU, and it produces a homotopy commutative and associative ring spectrum. The question of whether or not it's E infinity, on the other hand. Well, don't work on that one without an expert. And I mean, take expert advice, right? That's a hard question. And that's a corollary. Maybe I'll save this corollary for later. Some other covers. Well, I can give you covers for MN. There is a representable and faithfully flat morphism FP UN into MN. And the ideal IN, which defines FGN, restricted to evaluated at this guy, is the invariant ideal. So I think if you combine this formula, this is a very long way of answering your question before. If you combine this formula with this statement, you see that it's a race now, that this VN is universally defined and vanishes. All right. It's instructive to calculate the two-category pullback. I won't do it. In fact, you don't cut down to T's. You start with T0s still. Okay? So if you think of these things, somehow the dimensions of these things are getting worse and worse as you go along here. It's one way to think of that. Let's see. UN. UN does not have a nice cover. This can be gotten just by taking the pullback. There's a pullback two-category pullback MFG MN, like so. But if you do that with UN, you don't get anything nice. You just get some open set of V, check of V. So let me make that explicit. Let's look at S, G, and MFG. And then inside of here, I've got this open. And I want to know whether this factors. So is it contained in there? So if and only if, let's call this spec A. Let's work over F on this. If I take this ideal, IN of G, which despite the N is, there's this confusing notation here. If that equals the whole ring, that's what it means to be in the open. Can I help you out here?
Yeah, but you're talking about MFG tensor ZP.
Yes.
And then this ring is over SP.
Well, this ring is over, this V is this ring. That's only over ZP. M1 is just setting P equal to zero. So that would be the same thing as...
Okay.
That's MFG tensor FP. Okay. Except perhaps for international plane flights, there's very little disadvantage to being tall. And that's useful. All right. So I want to state a theorem. So in particular, if I do this two-category pullback, then I just get the open subscheme of this spec V defined by this ideal, and that's certainly not affine as long as N is, you know, as long as I have two things there, it's not affine any longer. Okay. So I can give you a theorem. So I'm going to put a lot of people's work together. So this is Hovey, Strickland, and then later Naumann. Let G be a formal group over spec R so that spec R into MFG. So there's some conditions here, and I'm going to set them off in order. So the first one is that this has to be flat. Two, IN of G is equal to all of R. I don't know where you are in your writing here. But IN minus 1 of G is not equal. So I'm saying it factors through UN, but not through UN minus 1. Okay. Then spec R into UN is a presentation. So this is faithfully flat and surjective. Flat and surjective. And this implies, then by the argument I hope you understood last time, or at least the force of my personality convinced you was true, that so the category of quasi-coherent sheaves on UN is equivalent to the category of what? R, one way to write it is this, call modules. So what this last sentence here, I'm calculating something. Here I'm calculating that I need a hypothesis here with a coordinate group. With a coordinate. I can get this. I'm really messing this up. If G has a coordinate, so here it goes. Here's where it really goes. That's so I can make this calculation. So on this last step, I'm calculating that. Spec R, this two-category pullback. What's this saying? This is saying that if I have a formal group induced up from R and another one induced up from R and an isomorphism between them, then it's classified by this object here. So this is the thing, the classified isomorphisms, and this just is telling you where the isomorphisms start. Okay, that's a terrible way to put it. A simple example? Sure, just take your favorite ring with a module over it which is projective of rank one but not invertible. And just put that in degree two. Take the associated graded ring, that'll automatically have some complex orientation on it. Your question is probably name one that comes up in real life. So take your favorite elliptic curve over which doesn't have a global, for which the invariant differentials don't have a global section. And that'll give you one. Does that answer your question? Okay. Right. So this is probably confusing, but the point I want to make here, what did Hovey and Strickland actually prove? They proved that given any such ring, then the categories of all these co-modules are always equivalent. But they didn't prove it. What Naumann's contribution was to show was that they're all equivalent to categories of sheaves over this thing. So the primordial object is the quasi-coherent sheaves over this, okay, and everything's equivalent to that. And then this, the choice of this R is somewhat is the artificial part. Okay. Examples of such R's are the Johnson-Wilson guys. Let R equal up to UN minus one with the p-typical formal group law. So I just have to tell you what its p-series is. So I can even, despite the notation, this is not a, this looks like a polynomial, but it isn't, right? Because I have this sub f series. All right. Should I go through this calculation? Is it worth? This is, in fact, maybe it's worth remarking just for the historical record. Strickland sort of gets a little bit of short shrift in this thing because I don't think he's ever written a paper with stacks in it. But it's Strickland's observation, this formula. that if I have, so let's just do it this way. If I have spec S, H over MFG, or G, spec R, suppose I take this pullback here. So if G and H, if G and H have chosen coordinates, then what does the pullback classify? It classifies maps out of R and pullback, let's just write, of A is equal to triples, F from R to A, G from S to A, and isomorphisms from F star G. That's true whether or not I have a coordinate. But once I've chosen the coordinate, this is given by a power series, right? So that's equal to spec of, well, I'd like to say W. That's the Lazard ring with the coordinates on the end, right? W is equal to and then I have to tell you where F and G start, so I get this. I think it was Neil showing that formula to Mike that really got the whole stack business started. Because this is a, this kind of thing is a thing we get out of the Landwehr exact functor theorem. All right, you buy this? All right, page 2. Oh, let me give you a theorem, which is effectively due to who? Lazard. It reads as follows. Let me develop a little notation. I want to start keep talking about the geometry now of not just of MFG, but of this guy. So I'm only looking at, I've inverted every prime but P. So let's put down a definition. A geometric point. This stack turns out to have not so many points. Let's see if we can't write down what they are. So this is a formal group that's an equivalence class. Of formal groups. I'm going to stop. In fact, this is good for any stack. I don't need to. Okay, where K is a field. All right. It's like a variety, right? What are the points on varieties? Those are the maximal ideals. I mean, prime ideals. Well, I haven't told you what the equivalence class is. Okay. And two of these things, KG is equivalent to K prime G. If and only if G and G prime become isomorphic after some common. After a common extension. So there's some. So, I do some big. Another way to say the same thing is that there's a two commuting diagram like this. where this is. Yeah, I'm going to be vague about that. I have to know if, I don't want to belabor this, but you start to get into questions about, this is where the finiteness thing, which I haven't quite addressed yet, starts to really start to hurt you, right? If I just work with a flat topology, then I have to be, flat topology doesn't have enough points, right? So I have to be careful about this. So there's something I have to do to nail this down, and I'll do that another day. All right. Well, let's ignore that for now. And the theorem, the following. Again, I want to get to somewhere before. Let's let U, contained in MFG, be open. And suppose U contains a geometric point. So it has one point of height n. Then U contains a geometric point of height k for all k less than n. Proof, which I can give, but not today if you want. This uses the easy part of the Landwehr exact functor theorem. It uses the formal direction. The picture here. Here's this picture Morava draws, right? Here's MFG, this long thing. And I've got some U in it. Right? Here's U. And suppose that has a point of height n. And it has points of all the other heights lower than it. Corollary let's let N MFG be any closed substack with a geometric point of height N. So it's got some height N point in it. Then all of Mn is contained inside it. I'm just reversing the inclusion. So this is formal groups of height bigger than or equal to. Take the complement, right, and deduce something. Okay. So what good is that? In particular, if n is reduced, so whatever that means, So I have a closed substack which is reduced. That means there's no nilpotents in the structure sheet. Okay? Then there's two possibilities. N is equal to Mn for some n. So that'll happen. You just take the thing of lowest height inside it. Okay? And then that'll be actually equal. Or there's another possibility. There might not be anything of finite height inside it. Okay? Or N is equal to the intersection of all the Mn's. That turns out to be not empty. So we might as well call that something. M infinity, but it's by definition. So there is a formal group of infinite height, namely the additive formal group. So this is not an empty thing. Okay. All right. So now I get to, this is Morava's picture. I'll go back here. This means that this thing actually looks like this. Should I draw it again? It always messes up your notes when you go back. So the picture, Morava's picture of this guy, which he's been drawing for as long as I've known him. Even before we all had the words for saying what this thing is. I mean, in 1972, maybe art had words like reduced, closed substack, but algebraic topologists didn't, right? But Jack was still drawing this picture. Here's MFG, and you've got these opens. You have U0, U1, so forth. Out here someplace you have UN. So those are opens. And then the complementary part, for example, out here like this, that's M2. So there's a picture of this thing. Of course, it isn't really dimension 1. In fact, it's dimension minus 1, which makes it hard to draw. That's something we'll talk about later. But that's the structure. Now, I'm drawing this like this has one point, like the difference here has one point. Right? I'll get back to that in a second. So what's the content of this theorem? That there's this descending chain of closed or this ascending chain of opens is essentially unique. So, ascending chain of opens. It's unique in the sense that any other ascending chain of opens will refine to this one. I mean, it'll be just be, you've just picked off a bunch of things along the way. All right? And that's all a consequence of this. Now, let me finish with the following thought. Oh, so what's chromatic convergence? For quasi-coherent sheaves, that's what happens if you take a quasi-coherent sheaf on this guy, pull it back to one of these, and then push it forward again and arrange a tower of those and look at the inverse limit. And the theorem is that, so let me write it. I won't prove this today, but this is supposed to be one of the capstones of this course. Let F on be a finitely presented. Am I allowed to call this coherent, quasi-coherent sheaf? If things were Noetherian, I could do that, right? But
so, for example,
e.g., the sheep associated to a comatal BP star X, where, or mu star X, well, BP star, where X is a finite CW spectrum.
So finitely presented that
if I put like the Eilenberg-MacLane spectrum here, I get something that's finitely generated but not finitely presented. Then, and let's let IN from UN the MFG be the inclusion. Well, let's see. I can pull this thing back. That's exact to IN. So now it's over here. And I can push it forward. Now, pushing forward is not exact, so I have to derive that. Okay. And I got F here, and it certainly maps to those. This is some big chain complex now. Now, if I take the homotopy inverse limit of these guys, that's a quasi-isomer. So I have to finish, but this has teeth for two reasons. First of all, the UN has Noetherian covers, so you're back into real algebraic geometry at this point with this guy. That's the, secondly, the union of the UNs is not the whole thing. So the union of the UNs is equal to MFG modulo M infinity. So there's a point missing. The point corresponding to the additive formal group law is missing, but you're still recovering the whole thing. Now, the additive formal group law is the thing associated to mod P homology. So this is telling you that mod P homology doesn't matter. That's what that's telling you. All right. So let me... Now, there's another... Let me finish one more thought. We also want to look at the transition maps like this. We want to figure out what happens when you go from here to here. That means investigating what happens at the difference of those two things. So we need to know something about the geometry of want to look at this, so we need to study this thing I'm going to call HN, which is, you can think of as UN minus UN minus. So this is formal groups of exact height N. And more than that, we need to study its formal neighborhood. So this is the thing that Lazard, this has a unique geometric point, that's how I'm drawing it. So, unique point, this is Lazard's theorem, that over an algebraically closed field, there's an exactly one form up to isomorphism. All formal groups of height n are isomorphic. So I'm allowed to draw this dot. Did I make a mistake there? I just need separately. I also need a field. I actually need a noun and a sentence. But that's, you know, all right. And what's the formal neighborhood? That's Lewontate space, the deformation space. So that's where I'm going with this. This thing turns out to be, it's a stack still, right? I've got the automorphisms in the thing, so it turns out to be a jerk, but we'll talk about what that is later. All right, I hope this picture convinces you that something's going on. Let's stop for today.